Yeah, I can't describe to you what it's like to lose a child. It's like a piece of you is missing and you have to keep like moving forward without that piece. I was out with my mom and her phone rang. She answered it and she was like, "Hi, Scotty." I just remember her face fell and she didn't say another word and she handed me the phone and he said, "Kimberly, he's gone. Keaton's gone." And I just fell to my knees. Keaton, our son, was 5 at the time, and he loved Lake Powell. They were tubing, and so they were going about 11 miles an hour, and Keaton was at the front of the boat, and they hit a bump, and Keaton flew out of the boat, and the boat went over him, and the prop got him. So it was instantaneous. I remember driving down there, and the silence. I remember the coroner's van coming the other way. I remember Scott's clothes with the blood, and we laid in that hotel room that night just next to each other in silence.
Kimberly, welcome to the Roller Coaster Podcast.
Glad to be here.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on. You are somebody who I discovered through a really dear friend of mine, Mason Sawyer, on his show. And your story, I don't know if it touched me. I don't know what the right word is, but it had an impact on me for sure when I listened to it. I think that most people, the data says that most people will never experience the sudden death of a loved one in their entire life. And you've gone through it now
three times.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
I'd love to maybe start with your first experience with sudden death, if you're willing to share your story.
Sure. So that would have been when I was 19. My father's, one of his dear friends had passed away. And my dad and my brother were on the way to the funeral. And there was a girl that she had, I guess she was reaching over to grab something on the other side of her, on the other side of her seat. And she swerved into my dad's lane. My dad swerved into her lane to miss her. And she instinctively swerved back into her own lane and they hit head on. And my dad was gravely injured and they got him to the hospital, but he died about, I think, 20 minutes-ish later. And my brother was, he had a broken rib and a broken ankle, I think, and a collapsed lung, but he survived. And it stopped the funeral procession. Like, we don't do anything halfway in my family. Like, it was right there. When it happened. And I remember getting that call from my mom and thinking to myself, in fact, in my head, I don't know why I remember this so clearly. In my head, I was thinking, okay, when dad dies, da 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 da, you're going to need to do this or you're going to need to do that. And I remember shaking it off and going, what? Like, no, he's going to be fine. That's not what's going to happen. Like, there's no way. And then again, this like in my head, when dad dies, and I was like, oh my gosh. And then a few minutes later, I got the phone call that he had passed. So that was our first rush with instant death.
How old was your father at this point?
42. Way too young. There are 6 of us. I was the oldest at 19, but everybody else was still in the house. So, yeah. Fun.
What is that, as the oldest sibling? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked a lot about just stages of grief and the state of, you know, shock is probably an understatement, but like this, the state in which your body goes into when things like this happen? Like, what is that like at 19 with five younger siblings all still in the house, with your mother now realizing she's going to be raising you guys alone?
I really can't even imagine what she must have been going through. She had no real skills. My dad's, we had lived overseas for 4 years, and my dad had saved up a chunk of money, which does not sound like a lot right now, but it was at the time. And he came home and he bought two failing businesses. And when he managed one himself and had somebody else managing the other one, and they were embezzling money from it. They had just found that out. They couldn't afford to pay his life insurance. It had lapsed the month before, and they lost everything, and then he died. And so as my mom, I just can't even wrap my brain around what that must have felt like. Just the, what am I going to do? And she worked hard and cleaned houses, and yeah, it was traumatic for sure. For me, I remember going out. This is something that actually should be talked about more. For kids, the grief doesn't hit. It hits because you're sad and you cry, but then it doesn't hit. Kids don't really grieve until like maybe a year later. Like I feel like I watched this with my kids too. Like, and some of the experts that we were working with, the professionals, validated this, but they kind of are in shock and they don't know what to do. And I think they're kind of watching you as the parent, to see where you're going to be at. But it doesn't really hit them until further on down the road. And then you start to see the grief come out. Sometimes it's, you know, in reckless behavior or anger. Anyway, so at 19, I remember being in shock. I remember needing to be out with my friends. I didn't want to think about it. I remember being judged by my friends. Like, gosh, I remember a girl saying to me, gosh, if my dad had just died, there's no way I'd be out doing this or that. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, am I doing this wrong? Like, what's wrong with me that I'm out with my friends? But that's just what I needed to do at the time. I don't know. I've blocked a lot of that out. I think it was just kind of, it just was unbelievable. I think that that's the word that I kept thinking. It's just unbelievable.
How old was the youngest at this point?
10.
10 to 19, six kids.
Mm-hmm. My mom had us quick. Six kids in 9 years. She did.
Yeah.
Bless her heart.
How did this experience ultimately, you know, impact these children? Like, was it clear that, you know, specifically for maybe some of the younger ones that only had a father half their childhood, for example, that manifest itself at that time in their life or later in life or?
Not yes and no. One of my brothers, the brother that was in the car accident with him, really struggled. And he came in and took on, he was the oldest son anyway, but he took on that father role. Like, I think that he felt like since he didn't pass, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but
yeah,
that he should have gone instead of my dad, because my dad had a family and responsibilities. But he has always taken care of the family and my mom, and like really, I think, kind of tried to take over that role. My other brothers, they were all good kids. I had one that was a little, that kind of partied and tried to forget a lot. But the other ones really have, they're all productive members of society. And again, I don't know what they would say about it. But they all, I don't know, we're a pretty strong family. We've come through a lot together, and they're my favorite people on the planet. So
yeah, you probably end up having to really band together and confide in each other. And
yeah, we
it feels like that would create a sibling dynamic, which is stronger than
it is.
Most, right? Because now you've only got one.
Now we're trauma bonded.
You're trauma bonded, but you've only got one parent, and you know, probably you guys are old enough at this point to go, we can't put all of this on mom. Like, right. We have to sort of work together and help each other. And
thank you to our sponsors over at Bucked Up. I love this company. I love their products, their apparel, and their supplements. Recently, they dropped the mother of all pre-workouts, Mother Bucker. This is not for the faint of heart. This will make you want to claw your face off. So don't get stuck in traffic when you're headed to the gym. I love these guys. I love this company, and I love their products. They are clearly the best tasting pre-workout on the entire market, and they're number one for a reason. Bucked Up is my favorite workout brand, hands down. And they also have my favorite apparel for working out and just for daily life. It's Lululemon-like quality, but for a fraction of the price, that's affordable. So head over to their site, buckedup.com, where you can check it out. And for 20% off their entire site, use the code TylerHall20.
Okay. So this was what year?
1993.
You had a second one of these.
I did. 2013.
And what happened?
We were at Lake Powell. My husband at the time, his family had a tradition of going to Lake Powell. We went a couple times a year. This was the family trip. And it was his family, his parents and his sisters and their husbands and families. And I'm just like kind of flashing back to it. They had a houseboat, and the day before it happened, I was so uncomfortable in my body. I needed to get out of there, and I didn't understand what it was, because I actually really enjoyed it down there. But I just was crawling out of my skin. Mm. And I said to my husband, Scott, I got to get out of here. Like, my sister-in-law and her husband were going to be coming home the day before. And I was like, I got to get out. I don't know why. I can't be here for one more second. And he was like, well, obviously I'd rather you stayed, but if you need to go, go. And so I did. And before I went, I had a conversation with our son, Keaton, who was the youngest. He was our together. We were a blended family. So he had five and I had one. He adopted my daughter, and then we had our son together. And he was about 8 years younger than the next child. So he was the baby. He was five at the time. And he loved Lake Powell. But I asked him if he wanted to come home with me, because he was young, and, you know, do you want to stay down here with dad, or do you want to come home with me? And he really thought for a minute, and then he named like 10 reasons that he wanted to come home. There's nobody my age down here. There's, you know, like, you know, maybe I would have fun with my friend Weston, the neighbor boy. I could play Beyblades and watch TV. Like, he was naming these reasons. And then he paused and he said, I think I'll stay. And that was the last conversation that I had with him. So the next day, Scott talks about how he was feeling very down that day, which is not like him. He's very optimistic and enthusiastic, and he likes to go, go, go. And he said that they kind of just hung around the houseboat and lounged, and then the kids talked him into, like, let's go tubing. So they were tubing, and so they were going about 11 miles an hour. Our other son was in the back on the tube, and Keaton was at the front of the boat. And they hit a bump, and Keaton flew out of the boat, and the boat went over him, and the prop got him. So it was instantaneous. I can't describe to you what it's like to lose a child. It's like, it's indescribable, honestly. It's indescribable. It's like a piece of you is missing, and you have to keep, like, moving forward without that piece. Anyway, so they got back to the, they had to, you know, actually, I don't feel clear on their story. Like, it's kind of muddled in my head. So from my perspective, I was out with my mom. We'd gone to dinner and went to Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know why I remember so specifically why it was Bed Bath & Beyond, but it was. And her phone rang, and she answered it, and she was like, "Hi, Scotty." And I just remember her face fell, and she didn't say another word, and she handed me the phone. And I, like, uh-oh. And it, again, it's just split second, right? The timing's just like boom, boom, boom. But she handed me the phone, and he said, "Kimberly," which was a clue to me also, because to just say my name instead of going, "Hey, babe," or whatever, "Kimberly, he's gone." And I was like, who's gone? Keaton's gone. And I just fell to my knees in Bed Bath & Beyond. And I remember saying out loud, "Oh my God, oh my God." And it was like this plea / prayer / ugh, I can still feel it in my body. Just of, what do we do now? Like, what? I don't know. I can't even put words to it, honestly. So we left, came back to our house. Family started gathering. My brother and sister-in-law, and my mom all got in the car and went back down to Powell. And I remember just bits and pieces, like snippets of things. Like, I remember that my brother, it was the same brother, by the way, that was in the car accident with my dad. I remember him grabbing my hand to walk me to the car. I remember driving down there and the silence. I remember the coroner's van coming the other way. I had hoped that I would be able to see him before they took him, but it wasn't possible. So I remember the coroner's van going the other way. And I remember when we got to the hotel, I remember Scott's clothes with the blood, and he didn't have any other clothes. And we laid in that hotel room that night, just next to each other in silence. It was the longest night of my life.
I mean, it's your, I think it's your greatest fear. Mm-hmm. It's your worst nightmare. Mm-hmm. As a parent. Like, yeah, losing a father, losing a spouse, obviously very hard. Losing a child is just different. Mm-hmm. I think there's a different level that obviously I don't understand, but I think parents think about this, right? They think about what if, and you think about all the ways that you can try and protect them from any sort of danger or risk in life, right?
Sure.
And yeah, I know it was a while ago, but I'm really sorry.
Thank you. Me
too. I think there's a lot to talk about there. You know, one of them is this feeling that you had to leave, and the conversation that you had with him, mm-hmm. The night before or the day before when you left. Have you been able to reconcile for yourself or find peace around why, you know, maybe he decided to stay or why this yes. all happened? Like, where are you at with that?
So I believe very strongly that we decide when we come and we decide when we go, period. And he came, he glued our family together. It was about 3 years after we had gotten married that he came. And he, I don't know. I feel like this life is about experience. I don't know, like, why he had to die, like, what the whole huge cosmic reasoning is. I know the timing of it was perfect, though. I don't know how I know that. I just know it in my soul. So that conversation to me was proof of that. Because like I said, he gave me every reason why he should stay or should go, come with me. But for him to pause and say, I think I'll stay, like that to me has been such a comfort and a kind of something to hold on to, you know? So, and everyone in that situation, like in my head, had I stayed, I would have been next to him in the boat. It wouldn't have happened. Like Scott, okay, what could I have done differently? And to be clear, he's so careful and rule following in as far as things go. Yeah. There were some articles that came out just about it. And the comments on the articles were things like, well, he should have been wearing a life jacket and like, well, why were they going so fast? Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, and like, none of that was applicable.
Yeah.
They were tubing. It's like the slowest thing you can do on a boat, you know, besides idle. So, all of that. And then each one of the kids were like, why wasn't I sitting next to him? And like that trauma brain that goes into, okay, if I had done something differently, it wouldn't have happened. Therefore I can control whatever is happening next. Like you go into hyper awareness mode of like, okay, if I can just, and it'll drive you crazy, but we all, that's kind of just, I think the way the human brain process. Is made to process. So
the perfect timing thing. I'd love to unpack that a little bit with you as well. You know, before we started the podcast, I told you about an experience that I had that I think at least part of my audience is familiar with, which was the near death of my wife. And she wasn't supposed to live. Like what had happened, it was a pregnancy related thing. The way it all happened, the probability of her living was very low. And then she lived, and then you start asking, well, why did she live? Not that I'm complaining, obviously very thankful, right, for these miracles, but you sort of go, why? Now it's been 2 years and I'm starting to understand why. Well, we just had our fourth child 5 months ago. Okay. So, and I can't imagine life without Noah, my daughter, right? And so there's a reason, right? And just certain other things that we've been through together where you go, oh yeah, if you weren't around, this couldn't happen. And this was part of the plan. So when you think about this timing and you think about like this plan, you know, you referenced, I think, the universe around this. Like, what's your belief on that? Who's who's controlling this? Is there a God? Is this some kind of energy? Like, what is this?
I believe that we are all God experiencing itself. I believe that. I don't know that I believe in a plan. I used to. I was raised with a plan. Yeah. And that's what I held on to.
Yeah.
I was raised with very clear understanding of why we're here and where we're going and what we are doing. And I don't subscribe to that anymore. I believe we're all here for experience. Like, nobody has lived on the planet as Kimberly Waters Howard ever before. And so in order to expand our knowledge base, I guess, I came here to live as me and to experience what I've experienced. And I think that kind of gets all put into the huge database in the sky. I don't know how to describe it. I'm still working it out. It's only been a couple of years since I stepped away from religion.
Yeah.
So I'm still working all of that out. But I know that I'm happy and excited to be alive and to learn and to grow and to experience. And not having to have a why. I think we can why ourselves into craziness. Like, no one deserves to hurt. No one deserves to not hurt. No one deserves, like, it's not about, like, I guess I was raised with, like, you follow the rules and then you get blessed. And so if bad things happen, then what did I do to deserve this kind of a thing? And I think that's the stuff I can't subscribe to anymore. And I feel like I also feel like we have some choice in what we have signed up for. Like, I came recently to the fact that I have a lot of trauma in my life, frankly, a lot. Like, a taste of pretty much every type of trauma that you can name.
Yeah.
And in some way, shape, or form. And I have always wondered, like, what did I do? Why did I, you know, and what could I have done differently? And, you know, God loves me, but he must not, because why do things keep happening and all of this stuff? But I really feel like I checked D, all of the above, before I got here. And like, for all of the pain and heartache that I've experienced in my life and the trauma, like, if it's true that I picked everything, then like, what's to say that this next half of my life doesn't get to be joy and love and happiness and peace? Yeah. And so I'm choosing into that now.
Yeah.
Okay, I've done that. Like, now I get to do this.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's what I'm attracting to myself.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I was in a therapy session. I love talking about therapy sessions because, like, I want it to be less taboo.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so helpful.
Oh, it's so helpful. Every person needs therapy.
And this was a couples, by the way, couples therapy session to go a notch deeper for everybody.
Good for you.
And our therapist said, it was basically this analogy, or not even analogy, but basically we end up, specifically when you're raised in any religious sect, there tends to be a lot of talk around doing. Mm. So we go through life and it's a series of actions that we do and that we're sort of required to do in some cases.
Earning our worth.
Our
worthiness.
Yeah. Oh, that word hurts me. Mm-hmm. And he just said, what about just being? Right? Just being. And it feels like you've gotten to a place where I felt what you just said, which is like, I spent a lot of time doing and asking why and
trying to be perfect,
trying to figure out the plan. It's like, now I can just be, you know, and I feel like that's a much better, more fulfilling way to approach life.
It really is. It really is. And I think that, yeah, there's no pressure. And again, if we're supposed to be here to set scripture manner that they might have joy, and there, I didn't feel joy. Maybe in snippets here and there, the birth of my kids or, you know, those kind of events. But my day to day was pretty hellish, to be honest with you. I just, from the time I was 8 years old, I remember crying because I didn't live that day perfectly.
Yeah.
Like at eight, that's the pressure I was feeling.
Yeah.
And that's how the rest of my life played out. Was that pressure of, oh my gosh, I'm not perfect, but oh my gosh, I need to be, but oh my gosh, I'm so not. And I'm also a pretty authentic person. So to act perfect was killing my soul, honestly. It was killing my soul.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anyone any good to pretend to be something that you're not, or to pretend to be perfect or more than someone else. It does no one any good. Yeah. We're all here on the same planet doing the same stuff and learning the same things. So that's my opinion. The Gospel According to Kimberly.
We may talk more about it. I love that topic. I love that conversation. Part of this story, I believe, with your son, there was a blue motorcycle involved. Will you share that story?
Yeah. So about five or six months down the road from Keaton passing, I was not doing well. I think I was sustained in shock somewhat for the first maybe month or so, and then I just hit the ground and didn't really honestly want to be around. I wanted to be with my son. It was brutal, and I kind of just curled up in a ball, and every once in a while I could see the light, but that day I must have showered because I probably wouldn't have answered the door. that was my big accomplishment. But I remember I was folding laundry, and there was a knock at the door, and I looked out the window because, again, I didn't want to talk to anybody. When you've lost somebody, also, one of the things that happens is that you end up comforting other people. They really need you to be okay. And I wasn't okay, so I didn't want to be around people and try to prove that I am okay. Does that make sense at all? So I looked out on the curb. There was a blue Harley parked there, and I had bought my husband a blue Harley for his birthday a few months before that. And literally, it piqued my curiosity. I was like, what the heck? And it was November. It was freezing cold. And so I answered the door, and there was this man standing there, sunglasses, big beard, full Harley leather gear on. And he said, "Are you Keaton's mom?" And immediately, like, warning bells go off in my head. I'm like, okay, who is this guy? And what's he like? Why is he asking me about my son? You know, that's pretty tender. And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I heard about your son, and I just want to tell you how sorry I am." And he handed me a stuffed monkey. I still have it. Stuffed monkey and a book. And I said, "Thank you." And I'm pretty sure it started the tears at that point. And he said, "Can I give you a hug?" And I said, "Yes." And I gave him a hug. And I guess when I hugged him, I said to him, "God bless you." And that was all of our interaction. He turned around and he rode off on his bike. And at the time, I called Scott and I was like, oh my gosh, this just happened. And like, I think it was an angel. Like, the stranger like came and I was known. And like, I felt like I was cared for by God or the universe at the time. It was God.
Yeah.
And, And yeah, it really, it was a watershed moment in my life where I just was like, wow, this is such an amazing gift. So we didn't know who it was. We went on with our lives, and a year later we get a letter in the mail, and it was written on Keaton's anniversary. And it was, hi, my name is Brad Bailey, and I came and delivered a monkey to you. And I just need to tell you that you, changed my life. So he had lost his brother 10 years before that. And he had hardened his heart, and he was a pretty bitter, angry person. And, when I said, God bless you, it softened his heart and it changed his life. Mm-hmm. So he has been doing that ride for people for 10 years now. Well, it's more like 11 now. So anyway.
What is the ride? Describe that.
So he has bears, and he actually wrote a book about the experience. And so he delivers a book and a bear to people who have lost loved ones. A lot of times it's children, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, and he did that for Mason, your friend, our friend Mason. And that's how they got hooked up.
What is his name
again? Brad Bailey, Behle. He's incredible.
Yeah, I want to meet Brad.
Yeah, you should meet Brad.
For sure.
For sure.
Sounds and you like should an have awesome him guy.
On your podcast for sure.
Yeah. Okay. I know this is heavy for those listening, but we're not done. It doesn't stop there. Mm-hmm. You had an experience last year.
Yes. I also want to mention that a little less than a year ago, we lost my nephew.
Right.
In a car accident. So that was the third sudden death experience. But yes, a year ago, this is heavy, and I haven't spoken. I mean, how many people get to speak publicly about things? I haven't gotten up on a stand and showed everybody, told everybody my.
You haven't been in any testimony meetings lately?
I have not been to any testimony meetings lately. Anyway.
Sorry, I had to go there.
No, yes. And I don't want to be disrespectful. My whole family is still pretty active. And so, a little over a year ago, I found out that I had Lyme disease. And I had struggled with anxiety and depression my whole life and pretty much just chalked it up to trauma. I had a list of reasons why I would be struggling with that. But I found out I had Lyme. I started into some alternative treatments to try to get rid of it. And I had what's called a Herx reaction. There's a longer name for it. I don't know what it is. It's very German. Lots of consonants in it. But basically my strain of Lyme was dealt specifically with anxiety and depression. And when I did the treatments, the die-off was so fast that I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, I went crazy and was really struggling. And I tried to take my life. So that happened. It was like the lowest point in my life, which is saying a lot. And coming out of it, I don't remember this because I overdosed on Ambien, and so I've lost some of that memory. But I asked my husband, who he really was my best friend, and we had come through so much together. And I still to this day think it feels shocking to me. But I guess I asked him, I said, "You want a divorce, don't you?" And he said, "Yes." And we separated. We didn't ever live together again. And that makes him sound not very, like a not very good person, but he is a good person. And I think cosmically, my soul could not live the way I was living for one day longer. And I think I took drastic action, and I don't want to glorify it or make it be like, oh, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But I literally had to claw my way from death by myself. And I have never been happier.
This was 1 year ago?
A little over a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
I wake up every morning so happy to be alive.
How's your Lyme's stuff
I now? I went through another treatment, and the numbers are super low. So I'm doing good. Doing great. I feel very lucky.
Okay. Crazy. That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And like I said, I don't want to be like, hey, this is such a great story. Like, no, I wouldn't ever choose to put my family through that again. I mean, my sweet kids, my poor daughter, I'm that part I'm very sorry for, because how freaking traumatic is that?
Yeah.
Him, I wouldn't put Scott through that again. But for whatever reason, I feel like, again, he's a very good person. He's a good man. And, but he is kind of a saver. Like, he's kind of a hero, in good ways and in not so great ways. And, I think the dynamic that played out was, in order for him to be the saver, one of us had to be sick, because I spent our marriage sick. And that's not who he met, and that's not who I was when we got married. Yeah. But that's kind of how it played out. And it's all a perfect storm, right? My trauma came up. Like, maybe it's just that at that point I wasn't a single mom anymore. I had a safe place to land, so I could crash. Maybe that was it. Maybe. And then we, you know, going through blending a family and losing Keaton, and like, we had some stuff, you know, but, I wake up for the first time in my life since I was very young. I want to be here. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to do life. I'm excited to try. I still am afraid of some things, but not like I was, and it's not stopping me. And I loved what you said before about learning to just be. That's literally what the last year of my life has been, is learning how to be.
Yeah.
Because I literally couldn't do anything else until about like maybe like 6 or 8 months ago. Yeah. And I remember laying on the couch watching TV going, is this the rest of my life? Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I don't know what I didn't want to die, strangely. But I was just like, holy cow. And then I remember thinking back of a month before that and going, wow, I've come so far. And a month before that, wow, I've come so far. And I feel like this last year and a half has been just these quantum leaps and like totally just stepping into who I really am. And now it's time to share my story. Now it's time, like, all of these opportunities keep coming to me, the podcasts. I'm a part of a documentary that's being made. That's the short of it is premiering at the Zion Indie Film Festival in a couple of weeks. Like, and again, I'm just me. I'm not doing anything. I don't even know that my story is that encouraging, honestly, other than I am so happy to be alive, and we can do hard things.
Mm. I mean, there's, Yeah, when you go through what you've been through, you know, I think it's really difficult to get to a place where you can feel, in your words, happy to be alive, ever, for a lot of people, right? You've obviously faced, you know, tons of trauma, which is mentally, physically, spiritual. I mean, it's just exhausting. It just takes a toll on you. And there's no probably coincidence why eventually you were diagnosed with Lyme's. Mm-hmm. Your body had just been through a lot, right?
And that's just a taste, honestly. We haven't dealt with all of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you've been through a lot. Is there a trauma playbook?
No.
Is there any advice or encouragement you can share with people who are suffering from similar traumas in their life?
I would say, number one, feel it. Like, I think we shut down and we put one foot in front of the other because that's how we're surviving. Grief, whether it be from the loss of a loved one, for the loss of expectations, from a divorce, from whatever hard things we've been going through, there's always a level of grief, and grief comes in waves. It comes in waves on purpose because I really feel like physically we would die if we felt all the grief at once.
Yeah.
I really believe that. And so when the waves come, let it take you.
Mm.
It's Mason's whole thing about the cows and the buffalo, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I lived so much of my life shoving the grief down and being like, no, if I have enough faith, I won't have to feel this. If I believe in God and if I believe in the plan, then I shouldn't feel this sadness. I shouldn't feel this anger. I shouldn't feel this despair. I shouldn't.
You're running from the storm.
Right. Yeah. And it literally almost killed me.
Yeah.
Literally almost killed me.
Yeah.
Because that's not what I was born to live like. It's not how any of us were born to live like.
Yeah.
So the beauty of emotions is that they do cleanse the body of the trauma. They cleanse the body, the spirit. And so as far as trauma goes, feel all of those emotions and don't shove them down. And there's the rule says there's no rules. It's not going to come in order of all of the stages of grief. It's not going to, you can be driving down the street one day. Like, I'll be driving down the street and see something totally random and it will hit me. And that's, you know, years down the road. It doesn't happen as much. The other thing too is like, it does get better. I have a dear friend that is going into their second year of having lost a son, and that second year is almost harder than the first, I'll be honest. Everybody has gone on with their lives. And again, they want you to be okay.
Yeah.
And you think you've gone through all the firsts and that must be the hardest thing, right? But it's not. It's that second year is harder. And Mason and I have talked about that too. But you just got to feel it. And I'm trying to think of what my point was. Just then, I don't know, just watching people again, trying to shove it down. And I just want to be like, just feel it. If today sucks, today sucks. Guess what? That doesn't mean tomorrow has to suck. And guess what? Also, in those moments of joy, you're not betraying the person that you lost by feeling those moments of joy. They want you to feel those moments of joy.
Yeah.
They're there with you feeling those moments of joy. And so take it as it comes. It's such a freaking roller coaster. Such a roller coaster. And eventually you notice that the good days, or the okay days maybe at first, start outlasting the bad days. And you start to think, oh my gosh, like, does that mean that that person is like farther from me? Does it mean that I'm not as connected? Does it mean, like, what does that mean? Because again, we're meaning-making machines. And the truth of it is that, no, this is just part of the healing process. And eventually what happens is that the table flips and you start to connect with that person in joy and love, and those memories that used to make you cry make you so grateful and happy. And yeah, so that.
I love it. We'll end on that. Kimberly, thank you for coming on the roller coaster with me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right.